This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
There is a queer angle to every issue, and we will find it. But don't expect us to be nice or politically correct. Nothing is sacred, and the team will be finding the queer and profane wherever we can on Joy 94.9. Is nothing sacred?
Hi there, Joysters. This is Jim, and you are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And thanks to Leo and Stephanie for the Sound Museum earlier, and thanks to the girls from Her Story. Another two good shows that lead into ours tonight.
Fantastic shows, aren't they, Jim?
And hello, James. James hello. Is here on the panel tonight. Yeah, yeah. And James and I are here.
We're in tandem.
We're the only two from the regular team. Steph is having the night off. Claire's in Brisbane.
Hello to both of them.
Hello to both of
Hope
you.
Hope have a beautiful they will long
be,
weekend.
They will be listening. And listen, listeners, as you know, you can SMS us in on 0427JOY949. So that's 3556, is it? I can never remember.
Jim, you can never remember. So it is 0427, oh goodness, I can't say it, 559.
No, 569, I think it is.
Do you think we could have worked this out of years and how many hundreds shows? Hey, Jim, do you know what? We'll come back to
We'll come back to that. Or that's the text
or
message.
Or you can find the joy on your phone. You know, or hopefully you've got the numbers.
Or even better, this is much better for us anyway.
Robert.
Is you can ring Robert at the front desk on 1300-JOY-949. Again, the joy in it. So you have to find what the numbers are on your phone. And or you can email us onair@joy.org.au. Now, that's much easier.
That's really easy as well.
And that's the best way of doing it because it's much easier for us to read.
And because we love to have your thoughts. We are going to have some fantastic discussions
And we're going to
tonight.
Need your thoughts tonight because we're going to be talking to our guest who's in the studio, sitting up at the other end of the studio, looking all terribly excited because she's on the radio. Professor Samantha Thomas from Deakin University. And Samantha is an expert in problem gambling. Her special research area is problem gambling. And we're having her on tonight because, of course, tonight is Cup Eve, so it's the festival of very fast horses.
And on Is Nothing Sacred, of course we'd need to go there, wouldn't we, Jim?
Of course we would, because, you know, everybody's out there spending a lot of money on clothes and betting and all that sort of stuff. Australians love to gamble, as we know it's in our culture. And so we're going to be talking to Samantha about gambling and what it all means. Hello, Samantha.
Hi, it's great to be here with you.
Good. Thank you for coming in.
Great.
And we also have a couple of very special songs tonight because it is the 40th anniversary, believe it or not, of the Rocky Horror Show, both the stage productions and the film that was made by Jim Sharman in Australia.
Amazing.
And so we'll play a couple of songs.
We both chose one tonight.
We did. We both independently chose a song from the Rocky Horror Show tonight. So you can expect to hear Sweet Transvestite and Touch Me, I Want to Be Dirty. So please get to us on onair@joy.org.au and we will talk to you on air. You can ask any questions you like of Samantha, like what are the odds of you winning?
No, I think it's going to be a bit more serious than that, though, isn't it, Jim?
That's
any
true.
Any questions about problem gambling?
Any questions?
Questions.
Oh, good. That's better.
Oh, I hope I made that clear enough. Obviously, it's a huge issue and a very important one, and it always seems to be a problem area for politicians to tread.
It's a very big problem area for politicians of all parties to tread, in fact. And because state budgets in particular, rather than the federal budget's not so addicted, but the state budgets are all, with the exception of Western Australia, are totally addicted to the revenue from pokies. And even Tasmania, which has not looks like it's going to become that.
But we will have all of that and more with Samantha after our Rocky Horror song, I think, Jim.
We will. Did you watch Ka-Ching on the ABC the other night? The doco called Ka-Ching, which
did not.
Documentary
was that on Four Corners?
No, it was just a special show. It was on the ABC. It's still on iView. So if you want to see about the insidiousness of the poker machine industry, go to iView and watch Ka-Ching.
Okay.
And we'll talk a bit about that later as well.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Hi there, Joysters. You are on Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. And that number that you can SMS us in on is 0427 569 949. Or you can ring Robert on the front desk. Robert's out there on the front desk. He's just been...
He's got a trainee on there tonight, I believe.
He did have Sam on there before, but I think Sam's had to go home to bed because he's only a youngster.
Oh, but isn't it good to see? See, that's what happens. We're a station of volunteers.
We are.
And you can come and do kind of... If you're too scared to be in our position, there are many other things...
Scared to be in our position most of the time. So you can come and do the front desk. You can volunteer at all sorts of things. You can do the Taste of Radio course and be in our position.
We
did the Taste of Radio course.
We are very.
And that's why we're here. And
delving into our topic tonight.
So we're going to talk about problem gambling and or gambling in general. So we have with us Samantha Thomas from Deakin University, who has done quite a lot of research on gambling, but particularly focusing on poker machines. But Australians do love gambling, don't they, Samantha?
They do. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because we think about gambling as something that's inherently Australian. You know, if you think about all the wartime traditions, the two-up...
which was banned.
The two flies crawling up the wall, you know, and betting on which one will come first up the wall.
Which frog can jump faster. Which pig can run faster.
You'll probably compile a huge list of all the different things that Australians would bet on, particularly at the pub after a few beers, I think. But... the interesting thing about Australia that most people don't know is that actually we are one of the world's biggest gamblers. We're also the nation in the world that loses the most on gambling. And most
our expectations are not supported by the evidence of winning then.
No, and of course, you know, we lose a lot, and we lose a lot because the gambling industry has to make money.
The odds are against us.
Absolutely. And they're mostly against us with a certain form of gambling, which is poker machines.
So, which is the worst sort. And if I remember the statistics properly, we have 2% of the world's population and 20% of the world's poker machines.
Yeah, so we have a huge number of poker machines in Australia.
Billions of dollars going through them every year.
Absolutely, and that's why we also have one of the highest losses in gambling in the world. You know, poker machines don't care who you are. They don't care if you're gay or straight. They don't care if you're old or young or male or female. They just want your money.
They care about 90% of what you put in, don't they?
Right, they do. They care about the cash that you put in. And that's why the poker machine industry makes so much money, because these machines are designed to take money and to take lots of money, and are kind of designed to make you sit in front of that machine for as long as possible, feeding it
and
with your money.
And the film Ka-Ching that I talked about earlier, I saw on that there are logarithms built into the computers inside the machine to let you win only 10% of the time. So if you put $1 million in, you can only win back $100,000.
Right, so there was this really great statistic that used to be run actually by the Victorian government, which I thought was really catchy, which said something along the lines of, you're more likely to be struck by lightning twice than win a jackpot on a poker machine. And I think that's a really interesting thing to hold on to, that we look at these and the bright lights and the flashing colours and the sounds and the sometimes quite glamorous environments that they're in. But in actual fact, behind that is a lot of misery, because they take people's money. And there are a whole range of different things that are used with poker machines, and also all the way through the gambling industry, to make sure that the house wins most of the time.
Well, someone put it well when they said it. It's pretty much like a reverse ATM, people. It's a bit sad. With a few extra levers
and
lights.
The old days, the poker machines used to have this handle that you pulled down, and people used to think there was some form of skill in the way you pulled down the handle. Mm. But even that's been taken off them, because now all you do is push a button, like on a slot machine, like on a any video game. You just push the button, and the button can run through 20 bets for you at a time. Right. And they're designed to not let you win.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a reason why, you know, poker machines are called the crack cocaine of gambling or electronic morphine. And that's because they are so highly addictive for so many people. So if we think about in Australia, you know, we have over 200,000 people who have a problem with gambling. And for every single one of those people who have a problem with gambling, we know that between 5 and 10 other people are negatively impacted. So although problem gambling may not affect you, personally, it may affect your family, it may affect your friends, or it may affect the communities that you live in. And that's why we say this is one of our new big, big public health issues in Australia, almost as big, or maybe just as big, as tobacco and alcohol were.
Is it linked also to things like domestic violence, to mental health problems, suicide and all those sorts of issues?
That's a really great question, because sometimes when we think about gambling addiction, we just think, well, these are people who lose their money and that's it. Actually, gambling harm is linked to, or problem gambling is linked to, so many health and social issues. So we know that problem gambling is linked to things like domestic violence, which is a huge issue. We know it's linked to crime, to mental health issues. But we also know that it's linked to a lot of social issues, like loss of housing, for example. So this is a problem that isn't just about losing money. It's actually a much bigger problem with lots of different social and health issues that go along with it.
So I suppose, Samantha, it's also that it impacts far beyond the individual that's actually, well, as Jim said, pulling the lever or pressing the button.
Yeah, and you know, one of the really interesting things, and one of the things that I think is really sad about gambling and problem gambling and gambling addiction, is that it's so highly stigmatized. And part of that is because when we think about problem gambling, we think about it being an individual's fault. We forget that behind a lot of this is the gambling industry, which employs heaps of different types of strategies to make people bet. So tomorrow, we will have seen, you know, over the last few weeks, many people in Victoria will have seen train stations saturated by advertising, little inducements that come up in advertising, you know, free bets and money back guarantees and things. And all of those things are designed to make people have a gamble.
I have had a phone call every single day this week from a number in Italy asking me if I would like a free $250 to spend on an international version of slots, which is an online poker machine game, isn't it?
And so, you know, one of the things that's an international thing, but also if we look
at... It's meant to be illegal in Australia, isn't it, to do a call-up like that?
Right. And so there are so many different ways in which the gambling industry can prompt you to bet. You know, the minute you sign up to a wagering company, they have things like your email address so that they can send you prompts online. They can send you little text messages or alerts and things. So all of these things constantly reminding you to gamble. And then, of course, when people develop a problem with it, we say, that it's their fault, that they should have been in control, that they should have taken more responsibility. And what we do in our research is show that it's much more complex than that.
Well, we've got to go to a few messages now, but I'd be very interested to delve in a little bit deeper about the connection between domestic violence, because obviously that's particularly topical at the moment, with a lot of politicians saying the right things about domestic violence. So I'd be interested to see what your research sort of uncovered about the links there. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
So we've got in the studio with us tonight on Is Nothing Sacred, Professor Samantha Thomas from Deakin. And we've been talking to her about gambling. And so I want to ask her, how does the industry get us hooked on gambling, Samantha?
Oh,
the gambling industry, I mean.
That's a great question. Well, first of all, we have to remember that there are lots of different types of gambling and lots of different types of gambling companies who all use slightly different strategies. So let's talk about the one that causes the most harm, which is the poker machine industry.
The crack cocaine of gambling.
Yeah, electronic morphine. So the strategies of the poker industry are kind of interesting. You know, poker machines were introduced in Victoria, I think, in 1992 by Joan Kerner. And what we know about poker machines is that they're pretty much primarily based in the poorest communities of Victoria. So they're overwhelmingly concentrated in areas that are already socially deprived, already vulnerable. And we know that these venues take a lot of money. And how do they do that? How do they get people through the door? I think there's a lot of perceptions, and I've recently moved from New South Wales, where the clubs really are kind of part of the heartland of regional areas in New South Wales. You know, it's a much different type of attitude.
And they run a line that they give back to the community, don't they? They have community endowment funds and things like that.
Right, and you know, a lot of the what we call the corporate social responsibility tactics of the clubs industry, you know, talks about buying football jerseys for kids in community towns and giving back to charities and things. And in actual fact, what we know is they really only give a tiny percent of the total taking of poker machines back to the community. And a lot of the money that they actually take goes back into the club. And so they do a whole range of different things that people might not be aware of. And underneath all of this, we have to remember that a lot of this is coming from problem gambling money. So if you think of the 1.5% of people who develop a problem with gambling contribute about 40% of the takings to the poker machines.
It's an amazingly high number, isn't it?
It's an incredibly high number. So in a way, I guess you could
it's thousands and thousands of dollars over a year, obviously.
Oh, millions of dollars over a year. And I guess you could conclude that the, you know, gambling industry is quite dependent on that revenue. And so, you know, they do a whole range of different things to bring people into the clubs or into the hotels in the first place. So we've just done a study in New South Wales where we looked at all the different things that they use to bring families into the clubs. So they're things like cheap meals, you know, they have children's playgrounds, they have, you know, specials on drinks and things, children's parties that they bring. And what we've concluded, which is kind of interesting, isn't it?
Oh, you know, goodness. I never even thought that.
Yeah, so all these things that they do to bring, and we actually found from our research that a lot of the marketing that they do on their websites is actually aimed at bringing families into the club.
Do kids know that this is happening? Is it getting into the heads of kids that this is a thing to do?
Yeah, so I think for kids, certainly kids have a really, really high awareness of wagering, so of sports betting, you know, and it's no surprise when we think about the amount of sports betting advertising that saturates our TVs and, you know, our community environments. So, you know, they're the strategies, if we go back to the clubs, that get people in the door in the first place. And, you know, most of us probably in our lifetime have probably been into a club at some time or other. And you go there and you can get a cheap palmer and a cheap glass of wine and things. But
cheap.
Very cheap, because of course it's subsidised by, you know,
the problem gamblers.
By the gambling that goes on in the club in many cases. And so what we hypothesise in this paper, and what we say in this paper, is, well, this must be there for a reason. And we think that this is part of shaping community attitudes towards the clubs, shaping the way people think about the clubs. And so then it becomes much harder to get reform of poker machines. So we know that there are certain things that we could do to make poker machines much safer. They're things like making people pre-commit, you know, saying how much they want to spend before they actually, you know, put their money into the machine. And you might remember that the Wilkie government, you know, the Wilkie deal with the Julia Gillard government at the time, you know, aimed to get that pre-commitment through, and the clubs mounted a massive campaign. And in the Ka-ching film, one of the politicians says, well, they almost borrowed the tactics of the NRA in terms of the types of things that they did in terms of opposing those reforms. We know that we could make the machine safer by doing things like maximum bets, you know, getting people to only be able to spend so much per machine. But it's interesting that at every step there's been some quite strong resistance to this reform. And of course, underneath,
but if you put a maximum bet on, if people can only bet say $10 on a machine or $100 or $1,000, they can only, by the way those machines are configured, win back 10% of that. So if you put $1,000 in, you can only win $100. That's the maximum.
Right, exactly. And eventually, if you sit there long enough, the way the machines are configured, you'll lose everything. And so, you know, we've seen a lot of resistance to things that we know would make a difference in terms of reducing the harm that's caused by these machines, not only to individuals, but to communities. And so now there's, a much stronger lobby that's starting to develop as people start to realise the harm that's caused by the machines to actually start to sort these machines out. And one of the reasons why it's so difficult to get reform is because, you know, one of the biggest benefactors of poker machines is our governments, who earn a lot of money through taxation from poker machine revenue. And so that's one of our biggest challenges that we have around pokies. And so what we're trying to do is, I guess, to make people more aware of the strategies that are used by the industry, but also, you know, to think about things that they can do to perhaps make different choices around where they choose to spend their money and where they choose to go.
Absolutely. I think we should be talking a bit more about the state government's reliance, particularly on gambling revenues. So,
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Hello there, I'm Funny Lady Judith Lucy. Support Joy 94.9 or else get it.
Hi there, Joysters. You are on There's Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9, and we're talking problem gambling. We've got a message here from Scotty. Hi, Scotty. He's one of our regular listeners. He messages us in every week, and he says he liked Ka-Ching, the Pokey Nation film. And then he says, it's like alcohol or drug addiction. You'll never beat that first hit. Well, the first hit in the case of pokies is the first win, the feeling you get when you have your first win.
Well, I'll have to watch it too, Scott. There, Scotty, and for all our listeners, I'm sure it's on ABC iView.
It is on
ABC iView. So everyone should be definitely tuning in. But we're having a fantastic discussion tonight with Samantha, and we're going to continue that talking more about the political issues, because we will eventually need some kind of political solution. But they're hopelessly, what's the word, Jim? They're severely dependent on gambling, in particular, at a state level.
Addicted. They're addicted to gambling, to gambling revenue. But the issue is not an easy one for politicians to deal with. And in South Australia, there is a political party called the Nick Xenophon No Pokies Party. And Nick Xenophon was elected to the South Australian Legislative Council, the upper house in South Australia, on a record vote a few years ago. He then transferred to the Senate. And at the last election, he got two Senate positions, I think.
And nearly two quotas, but so he missed out.
He's now announced that he's running candidates in all the lower house seats in South Australia and interstate. And he's aiming to take pokies on as a major political issue across the country. And before the last election, when Julia Gillard was Prime Minister, Andrew Wilkie, who's the independent member for Denison in Hobart, he did a deal with Julia Gillard, as Samantha's already alluded to, where there was going to be pre-commitment on machines and there was going to be maximum betting and all sorts of stuff like that. And there was such a huge outcry, and the clubs ran, in New South Wales in particular, ran in all the marginal seats. They ran big campaigns and pushed political donations really, really heavily to those people that would support the clubs. And in the film Ka-Ching, there's a really good interview with Peter Garrett, who was then former lead singer of Midnight Oil and a minister in the Gillard government, who talked about how he was affected in his electorate, which had lots of clubs in it, and how they handed him a big check to so that he would not oppose the issue, which he handed back. So it's a really interesting
question
tactic.
To Samantha, though. Then obviously there is by evidence of the next Xenophon running on a ticket of solely that the Greens and many within Labor and many within Liberal would acknowledge that things need to be done, and there's probably widespread public support for it. So what do we think with the biggest case example we had, which was the Gillard Wilkie model of having meaningful reform at a national level? What went wrong, do you think?
I think a number of things went wrong. First of all, I think Julia Gillard reneged on a deal. That's the main thing that went wrong. And it was kind of interesting that she did, because, you know, poker machine reform actually has very, very high support from the community. So there was a study done by the Australian National University in 2011, and they surveyed 1,000 people, and 7 out of 10 people, so 70% of people, said that they supported, tighter restrictions on poker machines in Australia. But the gambling lobby and the gambling industry mounted a great case against reform. And don't forget that behind the scenes of this industry, so we just see the gambling products, you know, that are on the surface, but there's lots of things that go on in the back rooms of political power, of power. You know, there's lobbying, there's political donations. That's not just from the gambling industry, but the tobacco industry uses those tactics. The alcohol industry uses those tactics. They're highly connected. If we look at, you know, the board of Crown Casino, we have like ex-politicians on the board and so on, ex-senators on the board. So this is an industry that's highly politically connected and can use its influence in many ways. They can be very vocal and they can mount very effective campaigns. And so I think in the end it became just too hard for the government. I think with this issue what we need to now do is to make this a vote winner. You know, that people start to demand that we're not prepared to accept the level of harm that's caused to our communities, and that people actually start to join campaigns. There's campaigns online that you can join. You can go, there's a website, I think it's Pokies Play You, and you can go and sign and give your support for poker machine reform. And what we really need is, no matter whether poker machine harm or gambling harm affects you personally, we need a groundswell of support from people who actually demand that their politicians start to stand up and actually tackle this as a really, really serious health issue for our communities.
So I wonder, Samantha, whether obviously a big part, and this is obviously not to excuse a backing out of the deal that would have been good policy outcome, but that even in particular the Labor Party are quite conflicted on this, because many of their Labor clubs that they have, particularly in New South Wales, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Are, you know, heavily funded and, reliant on, you know, pokies losses, as they say. Thinking about that, obviously, as you said, there's quite a lot of public support, as you said, 70% in the ANU thing, for action. How do you think, could there be targeted campaigns, particularly out of those club memberships, that actually say, no, perhaps the leaders of the gambling industry don't speak for us? And that could be a way to really sort of break away their power structures.
Well, I think if you want to get really good change, you know, and we have to start shifting the issue a little bit, and we have to start shifting the focus of the issue. So for a very, very long time now, we've made the focus of this issue about problem individuals. Yeah, people who...
There is a problem, but it's not problem individuals.
Right, and what we have is we have a problematic range of industries, you know, not just the poker machine industry, but we also have, you know, wagering industries who advertise en masse in time slots where we have, you know, sporting matches where we know lots of kids are watching. We have a whole range of different things that are going on. And I think that at some point we have to demand that there's a bit of mutual obligation that goes on, that sure, we want people to start to think about what they do and how they interact with gambling products and services. But there also has to be much more responsibility from government in terms of making sure that people are protected from harm. We've seen that. You know, Australians has been public health leaders in many, many areas of health in terms of reducing harm. If you think about things as simple as making people wear seatbelts, you know,
which was opposed.
Was probably opposed. If we think about getting tobacco advertising out of sport, you know, those sorts of things actually had a huge impact on reducing levels of harm. And governments played a really clear role in that. So where there's a will to do something, governments can act. And that's what we need governments to do now. And people need to start demanding that they do.
I think we should note there then that I think Richard Di Natale, who is the new Greens leader, when he was in the portfolio for sport, I think for the Greens, announced a policy to remove advertising from kids. And I think that's probably a good point to that if there, you know, people are out there and worry about this issue, is to work out whether it's Xenophon, whether it's, you know, Wilkie, or whether it's whoever, and get behind those campaigns and really try and get public support, as you say, because it will be through those little small initiatives that will definitely have public support, because it's kind of like a no-brainer. Do you feel that we'll get that moving inch by inch?
Yeah, I think there are some issues in gambling that may move a little more quickly. I think poker machine reform is difficult, and we've seen that it's quite difficult. I think things like tackling advertising during sport is perhaps a little easier. We've started to see some shifts. So we know that, I think we have 7 Victorian sporting clubs now who have signed up to a responsible gambling charter, where they have, from memory, decided not to take sponsorship from wagering companies at their clubs. So we now have one AFL club who is pokey free. That's North Melbourne. So, you know, they really have been a bit of a shining light in this area. So
we've got one that's pokey addicted too, and that's Hawthorn, the current premiers.
Well, we have a number of AFL clubs who own poker machine venues. So we only have, you know, a very small number of clubs. We have the clubs in Western Australia, of course, who can't own poker machine venues, and then we have North Melbourne here in Victoria. But, you know, I think on gambling advertising, we've started to see actually a real pushback from the community. We've seen parents get up and, you know, people who generally love sport and find the ads kind of annoying and, you know, interrupting their love of the game. But I think anyone can see that when you have a saturation of ads for a very adult product and wagering.
There was a very big pushback for Tom Waterhouse, wasn't there, when he was advertising online during sports programs.
Right, and we saw a small shift from the government where they banned the promotion of live odds, whistle to whistle, but what we've seen now is a shift. So we've seen lots of advertising before the game, but we've also seen much more subtle forms of advertising. So there are things like logos on jerseys, things around the hoardings and the ground, our train stations saturated. But we've also seen a huge amount of advertising for gambling products through social media. So YouTube, for example, or Twitter, Facebook. You know, companies are using a whole range of different channels to reach kids. To reach different audiences.
I did see that after Ka-Ching was shown on the ABC, the Pokey Nations film, that the when they did a poll after that, it said that the opposition to poker machines amongst the viewers of that program rose really dramatically in terms of polling them. All this might raise problems for listeners' own behaviours, and if it does, you can call Lifeline on 131114, or you can call Beyond Blue, who specialise in some gambling counselling, on 1300 224 636. Well, there is a problem gambling line that you can ring straight through, which I think is run by the Victorian government, funnily enough, and it is 1-800-858-858. So if you've got a problem with gambling, you should seek help, and those are some of the ways that you can do so. But if you find yourself being conflicted about this issue, let us know and email us in on air at joy.org.au or SMS us on 0427 569 949. That's Joy 949, and let us know what your own experiences are.
Absolutely. Now, we're very fortunate. We're having a very important discussion with Samantha, but we are have to go to some short messages. But never fear, we'll
be
right back.
We have to stay on air somehow.
We do, we do. You're listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Hi there, Joysters. You are listening to Is Nothing Sacred on Joy 94.9. It's now just 9 minutes to 11, so we only have 9 minutes to go. So I want to ask Samantha before we go. We're talking to Samantha Thomas from Deakin University about gambling, and we've been sort of getting onto the problem side of gambling. Samantha, sports betting, is it about sports marketing? Is it about marketing sporting programs, or is it about marketing wagering and betting?
Right, so sports betting is kind of a whole new thing, and we really didn't see the marketing for sports betting before 2008. And we've seen an absolute explosion of the different types of sports betting that we've seen predominantly on television and predominantly during our sporting match. And this is what we call the gamblification of sport. And that's when our sport is becoming kind of a vehicle, if you like, for the marketing of wagering. And so we know a few things about the way in which sports betting is marketed during sport. We know that we've seen quite a big increase in the amount of gambling that's been advertised through sport. We know that there are a whole range of different products that are advertised, so not just betting products, but we also see things like keno and lotteries advertised during sport. We know also that many wagering companies have sponsor relationships with sporting teams, so you'll see the names of brands on player jerseys. And what we've been focusing on in our research is how this marketing impacts on two particular groups: young men, who are the big targets of these campaigns, and kids, who may not be the targets of the campaigns, but who are exposed to the marketing. Kids love sport. They love watching sport. I've got two little boys. They love watching the footy. And so for young men, what we found is that this marketing is actually having a real impact on their gambling behaviours. We've started to see gambling become, and sports betting become, normalised in some young men's peer groups. So when they go to the footy, they naturally bet now, but also we've seen a change from gambling being something that you just do by yourself, which is something like you do with a poker machine, to something that you do with groups of friends. So we've heard stories from young men who say that if they're the only person who doesn't gamble in their group of friends, then they don't feel part of the group anymore. That gambling is now one of the rituals that they do when they're watching sport. So just as you'd have a beer and a meat pie, now you also would have a punt on the game as well. We also know that gambling can have, or this type of advertising has impact on children. And we know that that kids see and recall a lot of the things that they see on TV, particularly around the campaign. So we have kids now who can recall a whole range of different brands, sometimes four or five gambling brands. Kids are able to recall details of commercials. And they tell us all of this in our studies that we do. And kids tell us that they find two things in particular that are really influential. The first thing is when the sponsorship or the advertising is related to a celebrity. So we know Samuel L. Jackson, for example, advertises a particular brand of sports betting, and kids can often recall his name and they know the company that he sponsors.
And they know the voice, don't they?
And they know, yeah, and they also can tell you the details of the ad. So they're very good at the moment at talking to us when we talk to kids in the community about cashback campaigns or ads. And kids watch those and think that they can't lose. So I remember an 8-year-old saying to us, "Oh, well, you know, I would bet with this company because if I'm losing, they'll give me my cash back." So kids recall bits and pieces from the marketing, but sometimes they get it wrong. They don't actually understand the risk that's involved. And kids also say that they think that sporting organisations have a big responsibility to try and actually lessen the amount of advertising that happens within sport. So kids are very clear that they think sporting teams should actually start to reduce their alignment with sports betting companies and should be one of the real leaders in stopping kids being exposed to this type of gambling. And of course, this is all a really big problem because we know that kids have a much higher rate of problem gambling than adults.
So it's, I suppose the worst thing about it is that about that blurring of the lines between, something that is completely has nothing to do with gambling, that is sport or something, you know, something fun, and then it's, incorporating in and blurring it for kids, which is, you know, the worst kind because they're the ones that have no choice.
Yeah.
And that problem gambling leads to things that aren't any fun.
Right. And so, you know, we have parents who tell us now that their kids don't talk about their favourite player anymore or who they think will kick the next goal. Kids talk about footy in particular in terms of the odds, this team's odds on favourite to win and so on. I had one mum in a really recent study that we did who said that her kid wagered with things around the house. So he didn't quite understand the concept of gambling, but he would make bets related to sport, and he would use various things, household items, that he would wager with other members of the family. So this is part of this normalisation process that we're starting to see with kids.
Cleaning your room,
for instance. Yeah, well, I'd make very tricky bets with my kids around that, and I'd make sure that the house won.
Yeah. The only time when we want the house to win.
Well, the house will win, because the odds are that the house will win.
Yes.
So that's our big, big concern at the moment, that kids are may not be the targets of campaigns, but they're certainly exposed to some tactics.
And they're
tactics,
the recipients of
they're
campaigns.
The collateral. Yeah.
And I guess our biggest concern at the moment is when we see the gambling industry and some wagering companies at the moment are using cartoons in their marketing. So they use cartoon mascots. And, of course, we know from tobacco that those types of cartoons, when they were used in advertising, were actually incredibly influential on young people and their recall and preference of cigarette brands.
Yes, see? It sounds very similar. It also sounds very similar to advertising junk food to kids. Mm. So fast food and all those sorts of things. And kids had quite similar recalls in fast food advertising and what they thought about that too, didn't
they? Right, so particularly the alignment with sport is a really great way of getting kids to form what we call a brand preference with a certain product very early, and kids will quite often choose the brand of whatever product it is that's associated with their favourite team.
I mean, I was appalled when I was watching something on TV the other day and a clip came on about a particular football code, I won't name it, and it had somebody was wearing a jersey with a fast food outlet and a betting thing on the front of it, and that clearly is about getting the message through. So this has been a really interesting discussion. Thank you very much, Samantha, for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And if you've got a problem that you want to deal with, people out there, I'm going to read out those numbers once again. Beyond Blue, 1300 224 636. Lifeline is 131114. And the Problem Gambling number direct line is 1800 858 858. So if you want to say anything more about this, leave us a message on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/isnothingsacred on Joy 94.9. And thanks everyone for listening. It's now almost 11 o'clock and we will see you next week.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.